Welcome to the West Coast Project Podcast for episode 4 of Orange is the New Black, A Whole New Hole. My name is Mike, and I'm here with Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike.
And this music is the dreamy music at the very beginning where we see Lorna getting up in the morning and kind of getting ready for her day. Just listen to it for a second. Getting her pillow and her magazines ready, putting on her lipstick.
Yeah, it's real reminiscent of what a girl might do at home. She's like, you know, wakes up and she's sitting on the side of the bed and she has her little rag curlers in her hair and everything, and it shows her getting ready and, you know.
Yeah. This was a really, really, really good episode.
I agree.
This was such a good episode because it had... Well, first of all, I like when music played a big part in it, and music did play a big part in this one. And Lorna's story is just really compelling to me. First of all, that music in the beginning is just really good production, really good directing, I think. That really sets a tone for this woman. It's just beautiful, it's kind of melancholy music, but it's not really downer music. It's just dreamy. It's like a dreamy element to it.
Dreamy, it's haunting, and I agree. I think it's perfect.
And so this woman, Lorna Yael Stone, is an Australian actress, and she's one of the women that, I know we talked about how these women look outside of the show. She looks really, really nice without this Lorna makeup, without the bright red lipstick, and... I don't know. I just really like the way Lorna looked in the show before she put on the lipstick. But Yael Stone, if you look her up and just look at her, she does look really nice. She's very attractive and not the glaringly, glitterily way attractive that Lorna tries to be in the show.
Right.
But I don't know. I looked at her and she has kind of an interesting story. She was born and raised in Australia in Sydney. She moved to New York and started a little theater company. And then after she was there for a few months, she got picked up in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, really? Just a few months. That's neat.
And then she likes this song, Almost Paradise, by people from Loverboy and Heart. It was the song in the movie Footloose, which was a way, way long ago movie. But the song was big in 1983, and Yael Stone was born in 1985. So... I don't know, that the whole timing of all that was just really interesting to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, so here's Lorna getting ready for her day with the dreamy music and the makeup, and she, the character development of Lorna, or the deployment of her character in this episode, is just really, really rich. Like she's getting ready. She's just, you know, a nice girl getting her magazines and her pillow, and she's worried that the van's not warm enough, you know, for the people in it. And she's just really considerate at first. You know, she looks really nice and really considerate. You know, how did you describe her last week? You know, don't you just love her? She's just this nice girl. You were like, she's appealing somehow.
Yeah, I still love her. I mean, I know she's crazy, but I still love her. She's kind. She treats everybody respectfully. She always has something nice to say. And I don't know. It's like she goes out of her way. She's one of the few people that's depicted in this prison that goes out of their way to be kind. A few others do, but she does routinely, it seems like, to everybody. And you can't help but like her. And I was shocked in this episode. I could not believe her character. Literally, my chin was on the floor when we get to that part. I couldn't believe it.
Well, you need a better chair then.
I probably do.
So, Fisher, what is Fisher just playing her in this whole thing? Because Fisher heard her talking to her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, fiance, whatever.
No, she heard her talking to her sister. Remember on the phone?
Yeah,
she
heard
her sister
right.
And talking about Christopher getting married.
She just winding her up to get her going?
I don't know. know if she was or if she was just maybe trying to offer an ear, because Fisher's really sweet too. Of course, then we do see her, you know, wanting to listen in on stuff.
She's not very sweet to Caputo.
So. Well, I think she's sweet. I think she's sweet.
You think everybody's sweet? God,
I don't think everybody's sweet.
You're the sugar fairy sprinkling sweetness on everything.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, so Fisher asks her about the wedding, and Lorna answers her in detail. You know, detail compared to what's really real. It's like embellished.
Well, yeah, she goes into the fact that she has a big family and everybody wants to come. It's just like, it's all this stuff that she has in her mind. She has thought of every detail, I think, of this. And I think they're kind of showing us that she's thought of everything. I mean, there's no detail that she hasn't even
imagined. Is she crazy? Does she really think it's still real, or did she just not able to accept it?
I don't think she thinks it's real. Do you? I think she knows better.
She just doesn't want to admit to the world that she's a lonely single.
Right. I think she's humiliated by, I mean, who wouldn't be, you know, if you be
Rosa. Well, Rosa's not humiliated. Rosa tells her right away, my weddings were cursed. Both of her husbands died.
And yeah, she wouldn't marry the third.
And that
yeah.
Lorna's whole life is ahead of her. And oh boy, do we get to see some of that.
But she's so kind to Rosa. She's apologizing for not having the van heated up. And she's, you know, anytime anything happens, even with Pensatucky, when they were taking her to get her teeth done, remember, and Lorna was going to have to sit in that van. They told her, they said, you're going to be here for hours and hours. I hope you're not going to be bored. And she's like, oh, no, I've got my magazines and my radio shows. And I mean, everything about her is just pleasant.
Well, most of what.
Right. Up to this point. Anyway.
So she's taking Rosa to get chemotherapy. Rosa, we're going to see, too, has a pretty damn interesting story, but that's not in this episode. I guess they morph from this van ride to take Rosa to the flashback of Lorna coming home from Twilight
for the 14th time.
Yeah. How old do you think Rosa is in that flashback?
Lorna?
Yeah.
Lorna? Yeah, I don't know. What, 23?
Too old. She's too old to be seeing Twilight, right?
For the 14th time, for sure. For sure. Anybody could see it once. But.
And so what's the situation with her setting? She's there with her sister?
Well, yeah, she comes into her house, and it's her dad, and then there's a couple other guys that are on the couch, we assume. Maybe her sister's husband and her brother or something like that. And then her sister's there, and her sister's busy, and there's a baby there, you know, gnawing on a box of cigarettes, and her sister's saying that she needs to care for her mom. So evidently her mom is bedridden or something. She's ill because her sister says it's her turn, that she handled her last time or something. I think they're showing us that her home life is really chaotic. Her dad, he's just concerned about what's on TV and watching TV, and everything's kind of cluttered and there's dishes everywhere.
Who's the baby? Who's that baby belong to?
I think it's her sister's baby, because she makes some comment about her sister taking care of the baby or something. That's so, why I thought one of the guys might have been her sister's husband.
So Lorna's room, it looks like a 14-year-old's room. She's in a fantasy world in that room.
Yeah, it's a girly room, that's for sure.
I mean, she has like nice bedspreads and stuff. She has like classy stuff because she's like stealing it. She's mail order stealing it. But her bulletin board is bullshit. It's like teen boppy.
It is. I've had daughters, and you're right. It is even tween, even younger than teen. It's the younger kid look. So.
Yeah, and her shirt, like her New York. Apparently this is New Jersey. Thought it might be Long Island or some part of New York. She's a Jersey girl. They're in New Jersey. I guess, maybe you're supposed to interpret it, but I think it's New Jersey. I saw that somewhere. But she's scamming Prada shoes. She's buying shoes. Shoes get delivered. Then she calls and says she never got them. And then she just wants a refund.
Right. She's putting them on her feet.
Yeah. Some just and they're glaringly like Jersey girlish too. They're not sophisticated looking. They're just gaudy.
Oh, they're Prada though. I mean, they're nice shoes, but.
Nice, expensive, meaning nice, but they're not, I don't know, they don't look very cool.
But they completely fit her and who she is with that lipstick and everything else. The kind of over-the-top look. I would have been completely surprised if they had been more tame or more, you know, more of a sophisticated look, considering...
No, Louboutins, like, what's her name, had?
Louboutin, is that what she said? Yeah.
Louboutin's the red heels the girl Lydia on Breaking Bad. But so that's Lorna, and we're gonna see a whole lot more about her, but
and I thought, okay, that's what she went to jail for.
Yeah, it's a feint. It's like a misdirection almost.
Yes. Yes.
So then we see a shot in a prison. And V is giving makeup advice to Crazy.
Well, yeah, she's seeing somebody else with a lot of makeup on, and she's surprised that girl doesn't get a shot for that, because evidently they've been really cracking down on that kind of stuff. And she also points out that the commissary doesn't sell that blue eyeshadow. And so I think it's just her roundabout way of trying to figure out who's bringing in the contraband.
Yeah, that was Red's game, right? In smuggling in the makeup and stuff?
Yeah.
Her
old
game.
Yeah, and it has been. Well, yeah, and her new game, too. But, yeah.
Yeah, so V says there's still got to be some holes in this cheese. There's still got to be a way to do it.
Right.
And then she finds out...
I'm sorry.
She finds out from Crazy Eyes that Poussais makes hooch.
Yeah, with Kool-Aid, old fruit, ketchup, and moldy bread.
And Tiger Balm. Don't put Tiger Balm on your lips or your eyeballs.
On your eyeballs, right. In case you were thinking you might want to do that.
Think she was making the hooch with Tiger Balm?
No. She said somebody else sells Tiger Balm. I don't remember. Or, you know, has Tiger Balm. Another girl. But I don't remember. But that's the only one she knows anything about is Poussais and the other girl that has the Tiger Balm.
So Suzanne was just offering that advice. Don't put it on your lips or your eyeballs because she probably had tried it.
That would be my guess, yeah.
So we see some entrepreneurship in this episode.
Yes,
entrepreneurial
we do.
Traits, because Poussais shows up with her pee funnel.
Yes, she does.
Her stand and deliver.
Yeah, yes, she does.
And this kind of kicks off the whole anatomy lesson of the theme. Another theme of the show. Why was this even part of this show, Michelle? This whole other hole, why the urethra is different from the other parts of the female anatomy. The mysterious urethra that nobody knew was a separate location.
I don't know, because of the apparatus, maybe, that Poussais was trying to make, and they were showing the entrepreneurship, like you were saying with that.
No, it's the other way around. That just kicked off the whole thing of the female anatomy.
It was just funny.
It was just a comedy, comedic vehicle.
I don't know. It also showed us that Sophia knows more about it than any of the women that they showed.
Well, she designed it. She designed
hers. That's what she said. So that was kind of interesting. It was funny they were fighting over it, though. They not only didn't know, but were so convinced that there was not a separate urethra that they were willing to argue it.
Yeah, so the examinations begin, and I don't know, who was it, Poussais? Poussais came pretty close saying there's a hole inside a hole, but then Sophia straightens them all out with there's not a hole in a hole, it's a whole other hole, and kind of tips them off, and then Tasty looks at herself with a mirror. So have you ever tried this examination, Michelle? the mirror examination?
Well, I'm not actually going to answer that, but I will say I was a nurse for a bunch of years, so I'm pretty familiar. I've done catheters on females and stuff like that, so I'm very familiar with the area.
Okay. Well, don't you think a lot of women might have this misinterpretation that they just don't know, they just never thought about it?
You know, I've got to say this, and I hope it doesn't sound too bad. I don't know if it's just because of where I am or just my own personal experience, but in nursing school, I was so surprised at the people who did not know this. So surprised. And this really brought back a lot of that for me. In our study group, one of the men who was married and had children didn't.
Well, men aren't going to know this shit.
Okay.
I would say 50% of the population doesn't know this. Men and women.
Okay. I don't know. I was shocked. I was shocked at that people did not know.
So you think most women know it and most men probably should know it, but it's surprising how many don't?
I don't know. Do you think men should know it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, they do, though. I would say 50% of women and 50% of men don't know it. And probably some, maybe greater than that.
I would guess more men don't know it. I really would. As ridiculous as that might sound, because... it's just... It's something that you would have to seek out. It's not something that's going to just make itself known to you unless you were specifically looking for it.
Yeah, but don't you think women want to look at their bodies and see how stuff works? And I mean, guys do that.
Yeah, but guys are a whole lot easier to do that with. With women, it's more difficult. I think it is great that women do, the ones who do. I can't believe that people don't know how their bodies work. And I don't mean that mocking. I mean it more as it's almost sad that females don't know that.
All right,
men, so. I don't expect them to know.
All right, so I'll move on from that. So next scene, Boo is mad at Nikki for sleeping with someone first. I don't know why, but I guess it's just their natural competitive nature or with each other. But Peaches Hoskowitz, do we know who the hell Peaches Hoskowitz is?
No, I don't think so, no.
Boo's mad because she can't get bumper to bumper with her because I guess Nikki did first. She's mad at Nikki for sleeping with this woman first. And, tells her to stop the clitterference.
I've never heard that word before, but okay.
And then Boo sees her fuck book where she has the notes that we talked about in the last episode. And Nikki says she collects orgasms and they start an orgasm competition.
Yeah.
I think it's unofficial. They don't have many rules or details about it. You know, it's not sanctioned by the NFL or anything. But they just kind of both say, okay, it's on.
Yeah, they kind of talk about, you know, Boo says this is her kind of competition. So I think they, you know, something's about to start anyway.
Yep. So I guess from here we go to Brooke. Brooke's kind of learning the ropes. And she's trying to grasp what years behind bars would mean or what would look like. And she thinks about how prison is different from jail, and one of the ways it's different is that your parents pick you up from jail. They don't pick you up from prison.
Are they just showing us that she just says whatever comes to mind?
She's the babbling Brooke.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't believe when she said that about Miss Rosa. Are they sure she doesn't just have alopecia? Seriously? That's, I mean, what a, it was stunning to me that somebody would say something like that.
Well, which, I guess,
course, you know, means that you've lost your hair. So she's saying, are they sure that Miss Rosa hasn't just lost her hair in place of having ovarian cancer? I mean, just whatever enters her mind just seems like it just bleh, comes out.
Yeah, I don't know. She doesn't have much. It's a direct route from her pea-sized brain to her vocal cords.
No filter.
So she's doing that, and I guess they're getting out of their orange state into their permanent state now, Brooke and Piper.
Yeah,
they're moving O'Neil into their,
comes in.
Mm-hmm. Their permanent spots. And at first it looks like Brooke and Piper might be roommates, but no, it's Red. Piper gets moved into Red.
Yep.
And Red's kind of got her space expanded out beyond just what one person should have. And Piper has a little bit of trouble moving in. Does Red know at this point that the whole Pennsylvania fight wasn't a total kick-ass, almost killed her event? Or is Red still a little bit afraid of Piper?
I don't think she's particularly afraid of her. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows about the fight and about how... Are you talking about how Pennsylvania didn't fight her back? Or
yeah,
just
does Piper still have the rep of being like a bust-ass, hard-ass now?
I don't know. I don't think she really did so much at her own place. There at Litchfield, I didn't get that she really... I mean, everybody looked at her like, whoa, you stood up for yourself. But I don't think people feared her. I think people missed her and wanted to see her back and that kind of thing. But I didn't get the fact that she was feared, and I couldn't imagine Red being fearful of her.
I think a little of both is true. Like it was like a false impression that she's a hard ass now, and that kind of made her a little bit more of a hard ass.
Well,
it was kind of that fake it till you make it, and it turned her into a little bit more confident, you know, kind of more self-assured person. But Piper's picking up stuff along the way. She's collecting the gear that everybody stole when they thought she was leaving the prison for good. And we're going to see what some of that stuff is. But Red complains to Caputo in another little brief cutaway from this. But so I have some questions now about this. Healy had let Red smuggle the stuff in, but Caputo says he won't tolerate it because of the drugs that somebody took and they died that got smuggled in. Who died from the drugs?
Oh, remember, what was her name? The girl with the braids.
And no idea.
Yeah, the one that Pornstash hung and made it look like she hung herself or something, but she had really died of a drug overdose or whatever.
So Pornstash didn't want it to look like a drug overdose?
Well, remember, he's the one that brought the drugs in. So he was the one that, I believe, if I remember right, gave her the drugs to distribute or to sell or whatever he was doing. And she didn't want to do it. And he was making her feel bad or something. That's how I remember it. I'd have to go back and kind of refresh.
So is Healy gone too now?
No, Healy's not gone.
So because Caputo's like, this isn't going to happen anymore. Why is he implying that Healy used to let it happen, but now it won't happen anymore if Healy's still there?
Well, I think he was just saying that, you know, Red's upset because she hasn't had a bunkie in 12 years, she tells him. She's got to have that little room to herself. And he said because she smuggled drugs, essentially she gets no special favors anymore. And then she's very, you know, defensive, and she says that he should know that she would never smuggle drugs. And he basically said it happened on her watch, and so she has a part of the blame to do with that. And so that's just the way it's going to be. It wasn't about allowing her to smuggle things in. It was just about her getting special treatment like she did and how people just kind of looked the other way.
Right, I understand all that. But so why is Caputo saying something as if Healy isn't there to let it happen anymore?
Well, Red's not in the kitchen anymore. I don't know. I didn't get that out of what he was
saying. Do you know their titles? Like, Caputo's like the assistant warden, isn't he? He's like one step below Figueroa.
Yeah, she's actually the assistant warden. Caputo is right below her. And then Healy is like a step up from a correctional officer, I think, as a counselor to them. That's how I got it in my mind.
So while Red's in there with Caputo, she gives him a tip for insecticide, garlic pepper, and some kind of sauce?
Yeah. Yeah, garlic and hot sauce or something, yeah, to rub on his plant.
Yeah, and this is going to come into play, as we see in the future, that it's kind of important that Caputo's into plants and horticulture.
Yeah.
So we find out that the van has another delay, that it's a 3-hour delay at the chemo room. And Lorna hears the song.
It's the song.
So, Michelle, what was your song from 1983?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I like Journey a whole lot, so I'm not sure.
Well, maybe you don't have one if you can't think of it. If it doesn't just, like, immediately pop into your head, you don't have one.
No, 1983 specifically doesn't. I was still in high school, but... Yeah,
so when you stalked your fiance, there was no song attached to it?
That wasn't my lot, but no.
Okay. While Lorna's waiting for the chemo session to end, she hears Almost Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that song?
Absolutely.
Before you heard it here?
Sure.
It was Mike Reno and Ann Wilson. Mike Reno was from the band Loverboy.
Beautiful song.
And Ann Wilson was from Heart, of course. Or is from Heart. They might even still be together. So we hear this, and this music reaches its exotic, slithery, long fingers down into Lorna's soul. And then she decides to visit Christopher.
Yeah, she starts to, like, cry, and she's singing along. And I felt so bad for her because... Were I to sing along to something like that, I would probably sound like she did. So it was like, oh, that's so sad.
Well, that's the power of music, man.
I guess, yeah. That's what makes us humiliate ourselves publicly, you know, music and alcohol. Hey, that's what karaoke is, right?
It doesn't make us, it makes you think very it's the most powerful trigger of your memory, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You don't have to do something stupid with it. It can be real. You know, it can just really trigger an old memory.
Yeah, music always takes me back. So,
my song would be a song by Jafria, "Call to Your Heart," "Call to the Heart," I think it is. But it's right from that same era. I actually heard it when I was on a business trip in Trinidad. Trinidad apparently is like 25 years behind North America in its cultural music and stuff. But I was in this little bar in the middle of nowhere in Trinidad, and they had a jukebox came on there. I'm like, holy crap, I used to love that song.
Oh, you have to put a link up to it.
I'll play it at the end of our podcast.
Okay, cool.
But this pushes her towards Christopher. And Michelle, I wanted to ask you, have you ever been on any last minute road trips, like spur of the moment, I'm going to X to go see Mr. Y or whatever?
Well, I don't know if I've ever been to visit anybody on last minute trips, but sure, I've been on, spur of the moment. Absolutely.
Where'd you go?
I went to Florida several times like that. I went to the Smoky Mountains.
Within 2 hours of like, you know what? I'm going to go do this trip.
The day, yeah. Same the day. And went, yeah. Have you?
Those are cool. They're not very good common sense, but they're pretty fun.
I agree.
So we go now from this. I don't know how far. I don't remember in the scene how far Lorna gets. She just starts to head towards Christopher's, I guess, right?
But she just grabs a map. Yeah,
she's thinking about it. The next scene is the flashback to meeting him at the post office or the shipping store.
Mm-hmm.
She's collecting like 50 boxes of crap that she's ordered probably illegally. and Christopher is there, and they have a literally bump into each other meeting at that post office.
Yeah, because her arm's piled so high with packages that we now assume that she's going to claim she never got. So.
Yep, and Christopher makes a joke about a mail scam.
Yeah, he did.
Kind of prelude to what we're going to see. They set up a coffee date. And yep. This was an interesting scene transition, because the next scene we see this theme of kind of diminishing and dying and things getting bad, going bad. We see Rosa, who's very sick, getting her chemo, and the old woman at her, you know, station getting her chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of we realize this relationship with Christopher and Lorna didn't turn out very well. So something went wrong with that. So that's kind of dying as well. It was kind of a switch from like happiness to sadness to dying and losing and things becoming lost.
Well, yeah. I mean, even Caputo's plant has some kind of disease on it that he's worried about it dying. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So back at the prison, we see V moving in on Poussey's hooch operation. She wants an angle on it to make money.
Yeah, and Poussey thinks she's talking about the... She's changed the name of the funnel, the pee funnel, to Shiwi.
Yeah, but who would want in on that? All right, she's mistaken. But Poussey realizes it's the hooch operation and tells her she's not interested in partnering up with her.
Well, she just says that she has no interest in selling it. She just makes it for her friends. It's just what she does. So I just think she's not interested.
I get the impression she shut down V too. Not just, I want to keep giving this stuff away for free. You know, I'll do something else with you later. She just shut V down. I don't think she likes V.
No, I think she has a bad feeling about V from, you know, maybe from before, but certainly from this point on.
So Red goes over to the burn girl and the nun. Who's this burn girl? I know she worked in the kitchen with Red, but how did the burn happen?
Oh, remember, this is where Red was trying to sabotage Gloria. So she put the oil in the ovens to make it like seem like she hadn't cleaned up or whatever. And I think her name's Gina. Gina and the mute girl, I don't remember her name, but they were still working in the kitchen with Gloria. And so Gina went over to the oven and went to open the oven, and it kind of exploded on her and she got burned. So it was Red's fault that she got burned, because they knew that Red had kind of set that up. I mean, I don't know if everybody knew, but I think they knew that Red had set her up to be... Well, they did know, I think.
So Gina's not ready to forgive Red. She kind of sends her off to the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And Red joins the Golden Girls. They're knitting and kind of babbling away. And I thought I caught the name of the old crazy one. Is Jemmy?
Don't remember. I don't have that.
But, Red's starting to see that that's going to be her crowd, pretty much.
Yeah.
Now, we don't see too many flashbacks of these Golden Girls in the, spoiler alert, but in this whole season, right?
No. Not that I recall any of them, do we?
I don't think so. We kind of see what happens to one of them present time, but we don't see how they got in trouble.
Well, and really kind of two of them, but yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, somebody had mentioned that they had been people who had been in Mac security for a long time and then had got moved to the camp area for good behavior after so many years or something. One of the inmates mentioned that when they were talking about them. I don't know. That's just what I remember hearing. So maybe it's just something like that. Maybe they really are the more hardened criminals, the longer they're criminals, and, you know, they just got moved there.
Yeah, I don't know. So we flash over to Piper collecting more of her gear. She's, as she goes around, she sees more and more stuff that everybody has.
Yeah.
And first thing she sees is Leanne reading her book Atonement by Ian McEwan. She looks like she's like halfway through and she's totally engrossed in it. She just snatches it away from her. And everyone dies. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. Poor Leanne, the idiot, sitting there.
I know. That wasn't kind. You could let her finish the book.
She stole her book. She stole it from her.
Yeah. I mean, she stole it. But we talked about this last time. Don't you think that it would just kind of... It's just like... I mean, even Yoga Jones has her flip-flops, you know? And Yoga Jones wouldn't take anything from anybody. We know that about her. But she's like, we didn't think you were coming back. So that's kind of what they do. Piper's done the same thing.
I hope you don't ever have to go to jail, Michelle.
Well, thank you. Jeez, me too.
And so Black Cindy has what, her MP3 player or something?
Yeah, I thought it was just like a Walkman or so. I didn't know what that was. Some kind of little transistor radio or something, but I don't know.
Yeah. And then the yoga girl has the flip-flops. And then Crazy Eyes has a picture of her and Larry on the beach. And Piper lets her keep that. I guess because she's not with Larry anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that was odd.
And Boo has her blanket, but Piper isn't tough. She's tough enough to get everything else, but she's not tough enough to get the blanket away from Boo.
Yeah, I didn't really understand why. Did you?
Because Boo's going to kick her ass.
Oh, Boo likes her. I mean, Boo's not this... She's not a bully or anything.
No, not too much.
I don't know. I mean, she's... I don't know. I didn't understand why she left that blanket there.
Because she couldn't take it physically back from Boo, and she took everything else back from everybody else because she kind of intimidated them.
Okay.
But Boo wants to make a deal with Piper to get a trade for the blanket, and she wants her to trade her Brooke for it.
Yeah. I don't understand this interaction Boo has with people, and, you know... And I'm just going to be frank here. Boo is like that creepy guy that does things, you know, that you are like creeped out by. And then he like doesn't understand why you don't like him. I mean, she does the tongue lick thing to Brooke when Brooke's first coming in. And then she like licking her finger, you know, like through her fingers. And then she does this thing where she goes up to her and sniffs her. I mean, does that work? Does that work on anybody? That's not a good...
She doesn't do it because it works. She does it because she's a crude slob. I mean, don't you think that... That's why I kind of asked you this last episode. Like, she's portraying what a man... There's a vacuum of men in this situation, right? There's no men for these women. So some of the women fill that vacuum. And Boo is that... That's her role. That's her... In prison, there have got to be women like Boo that just act like men.
Yeah, but that doesn't work for men. The point is that she seems to want these, even if she doesn't want relationships, and who knows, I think she does, because in season one she had a relationship, but that's not the point. The point is, this doesn't work. That kind of behavior does not work. And I don't understand why people do that kind of behavior.
It's all she has, Michelle. She's unsophisticated. It probably works once in a very far away and far between while it works.
I mean, guys do it too.
It's all they have. They don't have
this. Then they complain that they can't get a girl.
It's all they have. That's why what's her name? Nikki has 50 girls and Boo has nobody. Because her game sucks.
Well, that, and Nikki's really pretty too. So there's that too.
So next we see the pedicure between Poussey and Tasty, and there's more pee hole contemplation there. But they go from a friendly little girls being friends to tickling and hugging and eventually kissing. But then they decide that they can settle what they really are to each other, and they're friends, and they just kind of cuddle.
Yeah.
We got any take on that?
You know, I don't know if I do or not. I don't really know how I feel about that. I don't know if you would want to lay and spoon with somebody like that. If you know how they felt, and you didn't feel the same way. Although Poussey seemed okay with it, but I don't know.
Yeah, Poussey's clearly the more lesbian, and Tasty's the more straight, but they are pretty good friends. But, you know, you got to remember, too, that Poussey had the family growing up, and Tasty didn't have anything or anybody.
Right.
So they do kind of need the connection.
Yeah, but do you do that? Do you think that? What do you think about?
Yeah, they worked it out. They worked it out to a level that they both could accept.
Yeah, but Poussey looks very kind of sad and distraught.
Well, she was upset that she didn't get probably the lesbian connection that she wanted, but they both looked happy at the end of the cuddle.
I think she's in love with Tasty.
All right, well.
You don't?
No, she could be.
Okay. I think Tasty loves her back, just not in a sexual way.
Yeah, what does that mean? That means, like, don't you just love Lorna? What's love mean in that? What's love without a sexual? when two women are cuddling,
what?
Like, you can't say she just loves her, you know? I don't know.
Sure you can. I love.
You throw that word around too fast and loose, I think.
I do?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so.
Don't you just love Lorna? Don't you just love that old lady?
Okay, that's said in a completely different context. When I'm talking about loving somebody, I love my friends. I mean, I love them. And there's no, you know, it's, but there's nothing lesbian about it. And
Could we get a couple of them on the show?
Sure.
I'm just kidding.
And they'll tell you the same thing. They love me too, but not that way. But I think that Tasty loves her because she's her friend. I think she feels like she's family to her. But I think Poussey loves Tasty, but she also wants a relationship with her. I can't believe you said, what's love without the sexual aspect of
it? Well, when they start to go down that road, you can't just say, oh, they love each other. You know, it waters it all down to me. It's, you know, I think they're friends. I think Tasty wants to be close to Poussey, and she is in a friendship with her. I think, like, Larry and Polly are going to fall in love. They're idiots, too, but that's more of a relationship-type love.
You're right. Yeah, I see that.
Anyway, I don't know how we're going to get out of this poll, but I made a note here about V. What happens between this cuddle and what V does something? She sees something.
Yeah, she walks by and she just kind of takes note of what's going on.
Like
Tasty,
she's losing Tasty to Poussey, right?
I don't know. Just like it's something she can jab Tasty over later, something she can use against her. I think V is this constant manipulator, and she takes every situation and she finds some way to use it for her benefit and for her control. And I think she just takes note of what goes on.
Yeah, she wants an army. And if she loses Tasty to Poussey, then that's why I said earlier Poussey shut V down. She didn't just want to not have to sell her liquor. She didn't want to have anything to do with V. And now if Tasty's going over to Poussey, V's losing her. V wants the soldier. She wants Tasty as a soldier.
Crazy,
as a soldier. And she wants everybody as a soldier that she can get.
She does, but she also wants something to use as, she's not your friend, I'm your friend.
To keep them as soldier, yeah, to build a team.
Right, to break them apart from other people, just to manipulate in one way or another. I see her do it. She notices her surroundings and uses every little thing she notices to manipulate, like she did when she first met Black Cindy, and she talked to Black Cindy about the cigarettes in the electrical outlet, knowing that Crazy Eyes was listening. The whole thing just is manipulation.
But to an end. She's not just doing,
to an end.
She's
right.
Not Lauren Malvo screwing around with. She's looking for a team. She's building an army.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so thanks for reminding me of that. So Lorna is back in the van, and we do see she has a little bit of an inner struggle. She's like, should I really be fucking doing this? This is crazy. But she does continue on. But she does have that moment of like, holy shit, am I going to really do this?
Right. She's freaked out by what she's about to do.
And, of course, what she's doing is heading over to Christopher's.
She is.
And she's driving through, like, I mean, it's not on the next block. She's driving a ways to get there.
Yeah, well, right, because remember we learned earlier that Christopher was marrying this girl, Angela, and they were going to be living an hour away from where she was.
Yep.
So we know that it's not real far.
So we jump back to the hospital, and Rosa has met the young chemo boy, the young kid getting chemo next to her.
He's so rude, right?
Well, he's a kid. He wants nothing to do with her. He's playing a game on his iPhone until his iPhone battery runs out. I guess Rosa offers a joke. He's like, no, whatever, lady. I don't want to hear your dumb joke. But then his battery runs out, and he wants to hear the joke.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear the joke, Michelle.
Okay.
The doctor says to the patient, I got bad news and some more bad news. The bad news is you got cancer. And the more bad news, you also got Alzheimer's disease. So the patient thinks for a minute. And then she says, well, at least I don't have cancer. I'm not going to explain it to you.
It's a pretty bad joke.
That's horrible. That's terrible. That's terrible.
And because I had to play that damn joke, I had to look away from my notes. But she... The guy, the boy, finds out that she's a prisoner because Fisher comes over and talks to her. Fisher in her guard uniform.
Right.
And she's a prisoner. She's not just some lady in her old lady in her chemo outfit.
And her comfortable chemo outfit. Yeah.
And she's actually kind of a cool prisoner because she's a bank robber.
Yeah, he doesn't believe it. And he wants to hear her story. And she's like, which one? The first or the last? Yeah, that was pretty cool. And the kid gets impressed with her.
Yep, he says, tell me about it. And she says, well, in 1982, and then we cut away. But so it's cool that we have a theme here of like 1982, 83. That's the Almost Paradise song, and that's the time of Rosa's crime starting. And so we're jumping back from whatever. I think we're jumping back too far for real time to connect in this story, though. Right? Because if Piper is 24 or 25 in 2014. She's not old enough, right? Unless it's Rosa. I guess it would work for Rosa. Rosa might be in her 50s.
Well, yeah. See, Rosa could have been. This could have happened at any point with Rosa. I don't think that.
Yeah, right? 1982. You're right. So you're right. I guess Rosa's just that much older than Piper.
Right, and Rosa's one of the ones that. I mean, she could have been in there for a long, long time. Who knows?
Right. I take that back then. You're right. Rosa probably is in her 50s, and 1982, she probably was 22, 23.
Right.
So Lorna shows up at Christopher's.
Oh, my gosh.
And she picks up the key under the bunny, right? No, she picks up the bunny and throws it through the goddamn window. That was a little bit of a hint that something is... not all is right in Romanceville for Lorna and Christopher.
Well, right. Right. And then she goes and stands over. She looks at the pictures, and it's like somebody, it's a physical pain with her. She gasps at the stuff she sees. It hurts her so badly. And she starts to cry, and she starts to tremble. And then we see her go over to that poster board that's laid out with the wedding seating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible. And then the invitations, which she takes one.
There was a little bit of this scene, though, that I wanted to talk about, that before she even sees the picture, she just stands in the kitchen. And it's probably 3, 4, 5 seconds long. But you can just feel the weight of her reminiscence of this kitchen. Of, like, this could have been my kitchen. You know, this could be me and Christopher. Before she even gets into the pictures and the wedding plans and stuff, she just realizes, like, this guy's got a thing going with the woman they're going to live this happily ever after life. I'm in prison and they're in this kitchen. I don't know. It was a really powerful couple seconds, I thought, but you're right. Then she does see the pictures and the wedding plans.
Well, yeah, you can just see the devastation all over her face. I don't know. I don't think it's realization because I think she knew anyway, but the pain, everything she's wearing the pain.
Well, seeing it for real is different than just knowing it.
It is.
She sees the wedding seating arrangement. She picks up the invitation and takes it and puts it in her pocket.
Yeah.
She's tactilely touching and seeing and feeling all this stuff.
And then she goes into their bedroom. Oh, gosh. What did you think about that bedroom?
It was a little girlied up, I think. Poor Christopher's getting a little pussy whipped, I think. But
it's kind of sickeningly sweet with the embroidered pillowcases and the little teddy bear with the love saying on it. I mean, I don't know. Wasn't very adult, but
they do jab a little bit. They jab a little bit of comedy in here when Lorna looks at the closet and she's like, "Oh, this trashy clothes." You know, she sees what's her name, Amanda.
Angela.
She's like making fun of her crappy clothes. But then, or her clothes that might be perfectly fine, but Lorna just doesn't like them.
Right.
But then she sees the wedding dress, and that was really a sad scene.
Oh, that was sad. It was sad. And then she puts on the veil. I mean, she puts on the veil. She puts on this woman's veil. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That's when you start going. I mean, you don't want anybody to put on your veil.
I know. I sure don't.
No, you don't. Okay.
But she sees herself, Lorna, as the bride. You know, that's the, you know, I don't think she's like, I'm going to ruin this bitch's veil. She just wanted to see herself as the bride.
I think she hates her with the passion that most of us don't ever feel in our lives. When she was talking to her sister on the phone, and she started talking about her. She was talking about how this woman has duped Christopher. And I don't know. I can't remember exactly what she said. And her voice rose to this trembly, shaky thing. And she's making a fist. And she has this irrational rage toward this woman.
Yeah, but the poignancy is Lorna seeing herself in a veil that she's never going to wear, you know. That's
not with Christopher.
That's Lorna seeing herself in a role that she can never get to play.
Yeah.
So we go back to trashy Long Island or Jersey Shore, Lorna, I guess, and she's got a date and she's going on they're going down to the Jersey Shore, I guess, and from wherever she is. Then she's got a date on a sailboat and the Ferris wheel, and he's my destiny, like Notting Hill with Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts. Did you watch that movie, Notting Hill, Michelle?
It's been a long, long time, but yeah.
So that was kind of funny. And oddly, Christopher is her destiny for what we see. She says, we crashed into each other, and boy, they sure did.
Yeah, it's just perfect to her. And still, through all of this, I'm buying it. I think that Christopher is taking her to the Jersey Shore, right? Don't you?
Yep.
And that they're going to go on the sailboat and the Ferris wheel at sunset. And that she's so excited. And she has all these new clothes and all this. I mean, I think she's going away that weekend with Christopher.
But no, it's Amanda. She's just displacing her. What's her name?
Angela.
So next we see Red and Piper plucking hairs, or I guess Red's plucking hairs, but they have a discussion about facial hair, women's facial hair.
They do.
And Red gets compassionate with Piper about Larry. She starts to ask about Larry and do you still talk to him and what's your connection to Larry? This I thought was real. Like V is moving in on trying to manipulate people. I don't think that's Red's goal here. I think she just really is connecting a little bit with Piper.
Yeah, I think Red just misses. I think she misses her friends, but she even mentions at some point, it may not be in this one, but that her friendship came with perks and now she can't offer the perks. So, you know, she doesn't have the same friendships. And so I think she's happy to have Piper.
Well,
I think she respects her anyway.
People are fickle fucks. The second you're not useful to them, you're out. Husbands and children are overrated. That's pretty good advice, I think, from Old Red.
Husbands are overrated.
No, that people are, that people, the minute you're not useful, sometimes you're out if they're, you know, they're not really truly your friends. But sure. She shares her tweezers with Piper. So there is an interesting little funny thing, too, where Piper's telling Red about her one hair in her chin, and she says, well, whatever happened? And she, I forget which one she misplaces, but she says, like, oh, it still keeps coming back. Or it's, she misplaces Larry for the hair, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she asks something about something, and she's like, oh, yeah, it's starting to come up or something. Yeah. The spike. The hair she's named, Larry named.
So we do see Larry and Polly. Mm-hmm. Of course, we got to catch up with them. They're at the coffee shop in Chelsea, Murray's Bagels. And Polly's...
You have disdain for them, don't you? I can hear it in your voice.
Oh, I don't like either of them.
Tell me how you feel about this whole thing.
What do you need to know? I don't like them.
Yeah, but I mean, you have more feeling than that.
I think they kind of deserve each other. They're both victims, but they accept their victimhood. You know, like Polly could try to fix her marriage or get out of it. She just complains about it. I don't know. They seem too victim-y to me.
Even think Polly's complaining about her marriage. I think Polly just complains every word she says. I think that's Polly's persona. And I don't think she obviously has some complaints, and I think they're pretty reasonable complaints, but that's just what she does. That's what she did with Piper and Alex. That's what she does about every situation she's in. So, and she even made a point about it when they were in a restaurant one time. She made some point about, just because other people have it worse don't mean we can't complain about the things that are crappy in our own lives or something. And she takes full advantage of that. But
yeah, and she doesn't have a very good friend base. Like she says, Larry's her best friend now, which is a pretty shitty best friend.
Yeah, I think a lot of women, after you just have a baby, you kind of feel like that. I know it resonated with me and my oldest daughter who has a child. I know that she and I have discussed it and it resonated with her, that your friendships change when you become a mother. And them pointing that out, I thought was good. And I thought it was interesting because people who you're friends with and they're used to you being the non-mother, the person that doesn't have another person depending on them, a lot of times they do kind of slip into the background, even though they say they're going to be around and stuff. So I kind of felt for her in that situation. I don't know that that's totally uncommon. It's certainly something that was common, you know, in my own experience.
Well, what about Polly liking the guy who is her best friend's boyfriend? And Polly also knows that Larry knows she's married and he's hanging out with her. The minute Larry got sexual with Polly, he became like a really dreg of the earth. Because she knew that he knew that she was married. Right? I mean, how could she respect a guy like that?
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't think either one of them meant to feel that way. And you can't not feel a way just because you're in a circumstance.
You can stop your actions, though. You can
absolutely. You can stop actions. You're not going to get an argument from me there. And I'm not saying that what
happened. What about when they got complimented by the old couple, the old lady, like, oh, you're a cute family. They just think it's funny. They don't stop and think, well, wait a minute. We're really not a family. I really have a husband, you know, and Larry didn't think, oh, yeah, really, I'm not really the father. She really has a, you know, a relationship, and this baby has another guy that's his father. They just laugh it off.
Well, I thought that was pretty innocent. I didn't take that as anything more than innocence and kind of like a I don't know, a tension breaker for Polly and.
But it's step. It's step one on a path, or step three, or whatever. It's a, you know, it's the beginning of the path that they descend down into.
It is. It is. Yeah, it is. I think people feel how they feel, and whether they choose to act on it or not is, you know, a completely different story. But I don't think necessarily the emotions were wrong. The acting on it, that's a different thing.
All right, so Red, back at the prison, Red sees the dock, the delivery dock, and the truck and vegetables. What did she think? What popped into her head when she saw Gloria accepting that delivery of the vegetables?
Well, remember, that's how she used to get her contraband.
Yeah.
And that's all I got from that, was how much she had lost from that.
So it wasn't an idea. It was just like, oh, shit, I got to get my game back together.
Yeah, just this used to be my life, to get that stuff plus the perks, and now I don't have it. I didn't really.
Yeah, but she was calculating something. She wasn't just like, oh, well, woe is me. I used to be in that spot.
No, I agree. And she did have that look on her face, that kind of, you know, cut eyes, determined look.
She even whispers a couple words to herself.
Right. I couldn't figure that out. I don't know.
And then just coincidentally, she's delivering something to that old greenhouse that turns out to be her channel to the next gig she gets into.
Well, yeah, she sees the mouse going under the floorboard. So she knows there's something underneath there, and she lifts up the floorboard and covers that sewer. I assume it's sewer, right? A sewer grate.
Yeah, but not yet. We don't know that yet.
No, but I mean, that's what I thought when I saw it, was that it was... Because, I mean, it's a big round grate, and what else would it be to?
Yeah, but I don't think we see that in this scene. You're right, we do eventually find that out.
Oh, I thought she did.
She sees the mouse duck through the boards, and then she pulls a couple boards away, and then I think we flash away.
Okay, sorry.
Actually, I'm watching the scene right now, so I'm going to tell you in a second. But, you know, I just thought it was interesting, that expression, that when she saw Gloria, I think it was like, I got to get my game together.
Okay.
Not knowing what exactly she was going to do, but it was a motivation to her. And she does not see the, we don't see the sewer. The scene cuts away before we see the sewer grate. So she's just pulling boards up.
Okay.
And the next scene we see is Lorna back at Christopher's in a stupor, just walking around in that veil, walking around. She gets to the bathroom. And what did you think she was going to do in the bathroom, Michelle from Tennessee?
I've heard a lot of people say that they thought she was going to kill herself. That never dawned on me. It's just not what I thought she was going to do. Maybe I'm naive. I don't know. But I didn't think that. Did you think she was going to kill herself?
Yeah, I thought something bad was going to happen. I thought she was going to get caught. Although there is a very good clue in here that she's not going to kill herself and not going to get caught. And that clue is she looks at the clock. She sees the, she looks at the clock and she sees that it's like an hour later than when she started. So she kind of knows, or there's an hour left before she needs to get back.
Yeah, it's like 2:03, I think.
She sees the clock and that puts her kind of in a mode of like, okay, I have enough time to do whatever I have to do next. If she was going to kill herself, that clock wouldn't have made much sense.
Okay.
But that's in like my second time watching it. You know, watching it the first time, I thought, she's going to kill herself. She's going to get caught, something. She's going
to
run.
She was just keeping time to get back where she was going, because she, you know, it taken her, I'm guessing, an hour to get there, because that's how far Christopher was living from the prison. So I'm guessing she's got an hour there. That's all I was thinking. So that to me was like the, okay, it's 2:03, start now. And so I thought she had like an hour. So.
Except you don't take a bath with a veil on.
Come on. I do that every Friday night.
Her psychosis was starting to creep into the scene. She was very, I mean, just spending that much time in the house is like, okay, this is a little bit beyond sneaking over just to take a peek at the house and maybe throw
like peeking in a window or something, you know, looking in, like cupping her hands and looking through the window and thinking, oh my gosh, and you know, her heart breaks a little bit, but she's able to move on or whatever. Yeah, it was already creep factor. Her
or throwing a rock, even throwing a rock and breaking the window. Okay, I'm gonna go in there and steal the teddy bear and get the hell out of here. You know, taking a bath. Because it didn't really matter how much time she had to get back. What if he just comes home like he does while she's in the bath, you know?
Yeah, but the bath. Oh, my gosh. She climbed in somebody else's bathtub. That was a great bathtub, by the way. Did you see that faucet on that thing? That thing was great. But
yeah, water came out of it.
I mean, no. Well, it came out in like the little waterfall water. It was like one of those flat things. Oh, I love that. Anyway, it was crazy to get in someone else's bathtub. I mean, that's when you start going, lady, you are crazy.
Well, yeah, spending that much intimate time without concern about somebody coming in on you.
And she uses the woman's bath lotion.
Oh, my God, that's horrible.
Mike, that matters. That matters. It does. I'm telling you, that matters.
So we see in the courtroom, Lorna, the defendant, looks admiringly at Christopher, the witness. And we start to learn the ramped up progression of Lorna's crimes here.
Yeah.
First of all, we learn they were only ever on one date.
Just for the coffee. Just that one day. Not even a date. It was just for the coffee.
And that
this
she,
is when my mouth is just like opening wider and wider. This whole scene.
So she had stalked him with phone calls, texts. Started to show up at the house, giving threats. Then he had to change his phone number, his email address. He had to move. That's a pretty big deal if you have to move. And then we see that she did track them to Atlantic City. That was apparently the trip that she was bragging about.
Yes. That he went to with his girlfriend. Oh, my gosh. She threw trash on his lawn.
And then, but what's the killer, Michelle? What's the ultimate crime here?
She left the voicemails about how he wasn't helping with their non-existent dog.
No.
Oh.
She put an explosive device on Angela's car.
She did. I know.
A homemade explosive device. That puts it up and beyond stalking and creeping and voicemails and phone calls. That's like murder.
Oh, I know. And I mean, you look at her even in this courtroom, and she is so cute. I mean, she's so cute, and she's got this headband on, and her hair all teased up. And
you're insane. You're fucking insane, Michelle.
No,
she's
cute.
Crazy.
I'm not insane. She's crazy. We know that. You said she was pretty earlier. You don't get to say I'm insane for calling her pretty here.
She's
you know
insanely
this about
looking at this guy as these crimes are being read out against her, and she's like admiringly like puppy dog eyed looking at him.
Yeah, she tells her attorney that they're taking it all out of context or something. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that she is so cute, and she's sitting there looking so cute, and she's so
that's
crazy.
The very last way I would ever describe her. She looked cute in the morning putting on the makeup and stuff because we didn't have this other context. In that context, she's an insane criminal.
Mike, if you were watching this without the sound and you saw her sitting there,
but I had
you would
the sound.
Find her very attractive. I know, but I'm trying to differentiate the fact that
well,
she
well, you
was,
can't, though.
I have to. She was. The point is that she was so cute. She was
all
so
right.
Cute.
All right. She's cute. So she, we go back to real, or I guess back time. Christopher comes home. It jumps back to. Yeah, I guess it's real time, right? Christopher comes home. She's climbing out the window.
Yeah.
Looks like she gets away. She steals the teddy bear in the bathrobe. And she pretty athletically jumps out of a second-story window and climbs out.
Same.
He calls Amanda's name. Like, Amanda?
Angela.
Angela, sorry.
You've got, like Amanda. You want to name. We can call her Amanda. That's okay.
Well, you're right, but you're right. They don't show him seeing her. So I guess it looks like, okay, Lorna's scot-free and got away with this.
Well, I didn't think that. I mean, she's in a robe and she's naked and she's wet and she's got her clothes in her hand and she's got a teddy bear. And it's like, oh, my gosh. And they also showed the time, didn't they? Like an hour and a half had passed while she
yeah,
was
but she just, the clothes and robe and teddy bear didn't have anything to do with her at the prison getting caught. She was scot-free as far as that's concerned.
Well,
Right? She shows up. She's like, I'm sorry I'm late. I was, you know, I fell asleep or whatever. And they're like, oh, no problem. We just finished.
Right.
She throws the robe away and gets away with it. Nobody sees it.
That's, yeah. So lucky. I mean, like, last minute. Just last minute.
So Red goes in to see Caputo, and she sets up the greenhouse deal. So we know something's cooking in this greenhouse that Red wants to tap into. And Red is the master manipulator here with Caputo. She's like, look, I'm out to pasture now. Give me one hobby. Give me something where I can boss some people around again. And I can even help you with your plants. Like, she totally works the angles. And she doesn't premeditate this. I think she thinks up some of this on the spot. And we still don't know there's a sewer down there. We just know that she wants in on this greenhouse deal.
Right. You're right.
So Lorna does make it back. We see her get back with the, throws the robe out the window, and how did everything go? And, Rosa barfs into whatever cup.
Yeah. Poor Rosa. And it shows her driving off, and she runs over the robe as she's driving off. I mean, it's just like, you know, and she looks like she's been in a tub to me. She's all, her hair's disheveled, and her face is kind of, you know, that oily look. If you've said,
yeah, they're not going to put that together, though.
I know.
Yeah, you were just, you snuck off to a bath, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I know.
Fisher's just, you know, they don't care, you know. Oh, boy. But it's got to be shitty to have to go get chemo and then go back in a freaking cold van to a prison.
Can you imagine that? I mean, I can't imagine doing either or, but doing both. Jeez.
So back at that wonderful prison, now the meth girls are discussing holes.
Yeah, we're talking about the female anatomy again.
And Piper's team is discussing holes. Piper and the yoga girl.
Everybody's talking about it, yep.
And Piper's trying to put her plan into effect to sell off Brooke to Boo. You need protection in here, you know, you need, prison is not, it's not girl power. You gotta team up and get a prison wife.
A tough one.
Yep, someone who's mannish, bulky, but tender at heart. Could it be Boo?
Someone who inspires real fear, yeah.
But then Boo shows up, and like a bluffoon guy that you related to earlier, blows it totally, you know, right
off. Oh, it's horrible. It's just horrible. And Brooke's, as stupid as Brooke is, she gets it.
Yep.
She gets that they're setting her up. As goofy as she's portrayed, you know, and she just, even she gets it.
So Boo's mannerisms and her attitude and the way she just acts are way more unappealing than the way she looks. And she looks pretty freaking bad. So Boo, that's why Boo's having trouble with people. She's like the guy that, you know, thinks he can walk up and sniff somebody's hair and they'll fall into his arms. You know, that's her problem, is her attitude.
You know, and it makes me as mad at the women as it does at the men, because that has to have worked at one point. Somebody must have responded positively to something like that for them to continue to do that kind of thing.
Yep, or it's all they have, you know.
No, Mike, you can't have that. It can't be all you have, because you don't do stuff that don't work. And
doesn't work. You can't do stuff that don't work. Where are you?
Come on. You said you understood Tennessee.
You can't do stuff that doesn't work. Just your point will be heard a lot more. It'll be more accepted, more readily accepted.
Okay. You can't do stuff that doesn't work.
There you go.
It has to work. I mean.
Well, it doesn't work very often. It doesn't work now.
And it shouldn't. It's horrible.
It's a pimp fail. Brooke sees right through it. It's a total pimp fail.
Yeah, but Boo is horrible anyway, and her come-ons and stuff.
So what does work, Michelle from Tennessee? Nikki. Brooke goes off and cries, and Nikki says, oh, what's wrong? And she talks to her and kind of lets her feel friendly. And next thing we know, they're having sex with each other.
Yeah.
And Brooke is talking the whole time.
She is.
That's pretty. Nikki. That was pretty good orgasmic acting by Brooke, because she would talk a little bit and then be like kind of in the throes of like some pleasure and then talk a little bit more.
Yeah, Nikki finally finds a way to shut her up.
Yep, she shuts her up by switching positions with her, and Brooke can't talk anymore. Any, you have any other thoughts about that?
That's about it.
So Red explores her new sewer, and we do see the sewer now. Right. So Bald Move, I listened to Bald Move, and they had the take on this that this is also a whole other hole, which is pretty clever.
Oh, that's smart. I didn't think about
that. One of the reasons I don't like listening to them before we do our podcast, because they have some really good takes. Yeah, so next, I guess we see V and Tasty. V asked Tasty about Poussey. Are they just friends? Are you just lonely? Do you just need the drama of a relationship? You know, gay for the stay is for weak people. Don't be like that. And she's not your real friend, implying that I'm your real friend. I'm V. I'm your real friend.
Well, yeah, she even goes on to say she doesn't know you like I do.
Yep.
Yeah, see, it was just a manipulation thing. She just used that moment of intimacy between Tasty and Poussey to her advantage.
Yep. She wants some. But she would take Poussey into her army, too, if she could get her. She wants, yeah. You know, she needs manpower to build up her force.
Right, but she's trying to divide and conquer, I think, between anybody who might be closer than anybody would be with her, because we see how she really plays on Crazy Eyes. You know, she really plays on her and gets her. She wants everybody to like her best, I think.
I think you're wrong about that. I think she's trying to build bulk of an army. She's trying to build up a team. She doesn't care about people liking her. She wants them to partner with, you know, side with her.
Okay, well, maybe not like, but she wants them. She wants to be the person who influences everybody. And if you've got a best friend like Tasty and Poussey, then Poussey's going to have some influence over Tasty, whether or not she is in their group or not, as long as they're closer than each individually are closer to V. So I just take it that she wants people, she's manipulating the situation so she will be the, I don't know, ultimate authority, the person who's looking out for everybody individually more than everybody else. I don't know.
So that person that she manipulates will be in her army. She could be, I mean, Tasty could be best friends with Poussey if they were both in her army. She's just building up a team.
I think as long as Tasty wouldn't let Poussey influence her more than she lets V influence her. I think V has to be like this queen bee with all of her influence going out to each individual person. And if the individuals are influenced by the other individuals, then she doesn't like that.
All right. I give up. So next we see Polly and Larry with the baby monitor, and Polly says the baby looks dead, looks kind of dead in this monitor. And who says it first? I love playing house with you. Does Polly say it to Larry? Or does Larry say it to her?
Larry said he loved playing house with her today and he doesn't want to go home.
Yeah, I don't want to go home. Mm-hmm. And Polly kisses him. So what did you see cooking up from this? You knew this was sliding down towards disaster, right?
Well, I felt like that whole scene was as intimate as a sexual scene between them, maybe more so. They are sitting together. The baby's asleep. Polly's tired. She's laying her head over. They're talking about their day. They're talking about, you know, Larry doesn't want to leave. That's intimate.
Yeah, and you could just tell they weren't going to be pals. They were sliding into a relationship.
Yeah, I wasn't sure at this point. I mean, you know, Polly gives him like the side lip kiss. You know, we've talked about the different kisses many times. There's like the face holding kiss. That's the good kiss. But she gives him like this side lip. Just like a little, you know, right on the edge. So I wasn't sure. I'm not sure a side lip kiss.
Well, I was positive that they weren't climbing up into the ascending into a relationship. They were slipping and sliding into a descent of a relationship.
I think they just enjoyed each other. And I think they enjoyed their time together. And I think Larry loves to be around her and that baby. And I think she appreciates Larry being there, but her own husband didn't. And
okay. Next, we see Sophia giving the ultimate anatomy lesson. She had the diagram.
She did.
She drew it or got it somewhere. But she's giving this lesson to the totally juvenile crowd of women. The meth girls, Black Cindy.
It was to everybody, wasn't it?
Flocka.
I mean, there's a bunch of them out there.
Yeah, was Piper in there? I don't remember seeing Piper in there.
No, I don't remember.
But I do remember seeing O'Neill whining.
O'Neill.
He was learning as much as anybody else.
He has rapt attention from O'Neill, that's for sure.
He was learning all about clitoral hoods, and his mouth was agape.
Yes, it was.
So hopefully that works into his life and makes his life better and more uplifting.
Can make all of our lives better.
We go see a movie now with the crowd of, now everybody's in the movie, but it was a Michael J. Fox movie, right? Did you know what movie that was?
I didn't. Did you?
No, that's why I asked you.
No,
but
I didn't.
But they're in there and the Latinas are ruling the theater. They have all the best front seats and, Nikki says the reign of Whitey is over. And Nikki is kind of going steady with Brooke now, putting her arm around her, and she's kind of flaunting her connection with Brooke over Boo.
Yep. She's letting Boo know that even though she wanted Brooke, that Nikki herself has her.
And Boo is flaunting her power of the blanket over Piper.
Yeah, Boo's really upset at Piper over the fact that Nikki's sitting over there, copping a feel on Brooke in front of her. So she turns around and uses that hostility toward Piper about the blanket.
Yep. And then V makes a comment that none of this Latinas ruling the theater would have ever happened when she ran the place.
Yeah, she does a lot of that when she ran the place talk.
And we kind of see that her working Tasty over has worked, and she's got Tasty to the point where she rejects Poussey and doesn't save her seat, and she's kind of V's girl now.
Yeah.
So V's pretty powerful. Her tactics are working. And then we see Lorna in the back row.
Yep. Yeah. And she's sobbing. She has the tears coming down her face when the actors kiss on stage. She's sitting there holding the little stuffed teddy bear. And Yoga Jones, sweet as she can be, as usual.
Lorna was holding the teddy bear so he could see the movie. That was kind of nice.
That was kind of crazy, yeah. And she tells Yoga Jones that she's decided that she's not going to wear a veil when she gets married.
Yeah, why do you think she said that? Because it was ruined?
Yeah, she just didn't want it after she saw that Angela wore it, I think.
She had to she had to deposition herself from Angela.
Yeah.
And Amanda.
And Amanda, yeah. And she says she wants him to see her face. And it was like, that was one of the creepiest things I've ever heard in a movie that's in a show that's not supposed to be creepy.
She wants Christopher to see her. Oh, because the veil won't be there. She'll see her face.
Yes. Yeah, she's like, I want him to see my face. And then Yoga Jones says, well, you have a beautiful face. Why not show it?
Right. Well, she has none of this context that we have.
Right. Well, you're right. Nobody knows. She's sitting there crying and says she just misses her fiance. See, she comes back and she's still doing it. And I think she's hurting over what she's seen. But I don't know what part of her is still clinging.
She regrets going over to Christopher's, I think, even without the part about getting caught. I think she knows it's wrong and she regrets it.
You think she regrets it because it's wrong?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, I don't think she regrets it because it's wrong. I think she regrets it because she's seen things that she can't unsee now.
Yeah, but I think she knows it's wrong, too.
Nah. No, I didn't see that at all. Maybe. I mean, surely she knows it's wrong.
All right, we're going to take it out with Almost Paradise. Fade to Orange, Michelle from Tennessee.
Fade to Orange, Mike.
All right, well, that's it from this week, episode 4. Next week, we got Low Self-Esteem City.
Can't wait.
I like it when we argue because it's more interesting.
Well, then you must love our podcast. We do that a lot.
Yep. It has to be interesting to be a good podcast. And I think if we have different takes on stuff, it's more interesting than if we just say, oh, yeah, that was a lovely scene with the veil in the bathtub. Oh, absolutely right.
Well, right. Otherwise, it's just us recanting the show if we don't see it differently. So
recanting?
That's not the right word. What's the word?
I recant that statement.
Not recant. What's the word? You know what I'm trying to say.
Decanting, like when your wine needs more air.
No, it's not decanting either. You better cut that out. I can't think of the word. It's just us
recollecting. Going,
Mike. It's just us going scene by scene.
Recounting.
Recount.
No, okay. You're making me thirsty for wine.
It's very late here. Good.
Hey, when you watch we'll end with this last question for Michelle from Tennessee. When you watch the women at the beginning, when they play the song, do you recognize the faces?
No.
The super up close versions of the women. Do you recognize who each one of them is?
No, I usually fast forward through that, honestly. Do you?
Yeah, I can pick some of them out.
Oh, that's great.
Like the glasses one has to be Alex, right?
I'll have to go watch.
Yeah, that's your homework.
Okay, I'll do it.
All right, Michelle, call to the heart, Jafria. Here it goes. Bye.
Bye, Mike.